only done that one time already. Usually we do a half week, but it's just been special to be able to spend extra time with them like this. We're going to tomorrow show them some videos and things, and I know the adults, they like to see some videos too. So we have a little three-minute video just to show you where I come from. I've spent almost 40 years of my life teaching science, teaching chemistry and physics at Bob Jones University. And we feel like we're the go-to place for science and engineering for Christian young people. And so could you roll that video for us?
The high quality of our programs demonstrate that our students graduate well-prepared for careers in science and industry.
Our students tell us that we're doing a pretty good job. Our graduates give us very positive feedback about how this is going.
We have over 300 science, health, and engineering students enrolled each semester. And it's really neat to see the how they integrate one with another, really a sense of community here, especially in the science department. You can go in almost any room from when the building's open until they close late at night, and there's always students that are working together, they're eating together, and it's really a strong sense of community that they have.
Each of the faculty members is intentional about forming relationships with their students so that we can know them better and help them progress along.
We care in the Division of Natural Science about critical thinking. The goal is to get you to think like a scientist or to think like an engineer, not just in a theoretical sense, but in a where the rubber meets the road sense. And we not only have students think, but they have to actually do stuff. And it's easy to make something work on paper. You can make anything work on paper, but actually getting it to work in the lab is another matter entirely.
So the curriculum that we have and the active approach to learning have come about because many of our faculty spend 10 weeks every summer working on their curriculum and working on their teaching abilities. And that's led to a curriculum and a learning approach that we think is really unique.
Our faculty here hold to a recent six-day creation perspective. And we teach that not only in our Bible program at Bob Jones, but throughout the science curriculum as well.
One of the goals that we have for our students is we want to be able to teach them to be able to think not only critically, but also to think biblically in terms of the way they analyze situations in the world. We have over 20 faculty who have terminal degrees or PhDs, and they've studied fields that are in different areas, specialized areas of health, engineering, and science. And they come to BGU with a passion to teach the next generation and prepare them for careers that God is calling them to.
And we love relationship building with our students.
Not only just represent themselves or Bob Jones University, but they end up representing the Lord Jesus Christ wherever they go.
Preparing the next generation to know God, to love God, to serve God with their lives. That's really why we're here.
Okay, sat well through the commercial. That's good. So I see my wife wants another kiss. So we'll have to, she went and got that since Pastor mentioned that. So we have this little energy tube. And
since we're talking about lightning.
Since we're talking about lightning tonight. So you want to see we can generate our own lightning here. Okay, here we go. I have a greasy head.
But this is our favorite.
How many heard the thunderstorm this morning? How many heard the thunderstorm? Well, I knew I had to talk about thunder and lightning tonight. So we had a big moon on the weekend. Now we got the thunderstorm. And so it's like God's directing me how to speak about these things. Well, I have a couple demonstrations about electricity that go right along with the message. And so we're going to come down here. I need my wife's assistance again with this one. I'll do the... is there any way of getting the lights turned down a little bit here? Is that possible? If it's not, that's all right. Okay, got my thimbles here. So this is called an Odin coil. It takes the house voltage and it turns it from 110 volts to 50,000 volts. Okay, so the question is, you know, why doesn't it kill me? Okay? So if it does kill me, then we'll make the newspapers for sure, I'm sure. But I'm going to ground myself here. And see the sparks there. Got the light bulb there? I'll trade you for the thimbles. Here we go. So you'll see it start light up before I even get to it. I become a human light bulb here. So the question, of course, is why does it kill me? Well, there's plenty of voltage, there's plenty of current, but electrons have negative charges. And so because like charges oppose each other, they try to get as far away from each other as possible, electricity runs on the outside of my body instead of on the inside of my body where it could stop my heart. And so you may not know this, but of all the lightning strikes around the country, only 30% of those are fatal. 70% of people survive lightning strikes. And so I tell the kids, you know, if you're out in the, don't hold one of these, by the way, you know, put your golf club up here. Don't do that. That's a bad idea. But I tell them that if they're out there in the open, they should put their feet together and they should crouch down like this to make themselves as low as possible. And we have a picture of 323 reindeer in Norway a couple years ago, and the whole herd got killed by one bolt of lightning. And the trouble with reindeer, number one, when they are scared, they huddle together. And number two, they have back hooves and front hooves. And so the lightning strikes the ground, it goes up one side and then down the other like this, you know, and killed the whole herd, okay? But the amazing thing is that more people aren't killed by lightning, even though it has, you know, such power we're going to talk about tonight. Now, sometimes you see on the internet or weather forecast, you see lightning strikes. They show you on the weather where all the lightning is striking and so forth. You may wonder how they do that. Well, anytime you have moving electrons, you have a magnetic field that's set up. One of the things we talked to the kids about this week is about how God created the electromagnetic spectrum on day one of creation. And he had to do that because atoms have moving electrons. They have magnetism. And so you have to get electromagnetism before you get atoms. So the Bible always gets the order right. And so we talked about that, but I just wanted to show you this demonstration so you don't feel left out. This is called a ring launcher. And even the kids can tell me what a ring launcher does. It launches rings. And so here's an aluminum ring. It's not magnetic at all. Here's a bundle of rods. And then I have a coil of wire here. So what I'm going to do is press a button and send a current through here like this, and electrons follow the right-hand rule. So we have a north pole coming out this way. The rods, you know, will carry the magnetic field, and they'll produce an electric field in this ring, and the electric field goes around this way. And so you have two opposing north poles, and that's what launches the ring. And so this magnetic field that's produced by each lightning strike is what the satellites can see that. And that's what you see on the internet or on the weather forecast. That's how they get those lightning strikes on the map. It comes from the magnetic field, which can travel hundreds of miles as opposed to the electric field from the flash of lightning. So I thought you'd be interested in that. All right. Our text is Exodus 20 and verse 18. Exodus 20 and verse 18. Here is the children of Israel. They're out at Mount Sinai. And it says, "And all the people saw the thunderings and the lightnings and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they removed and stood afar off. Few things strike fear into the heart of a man more than thunder and lightning." Are those fears overblown? I don't think so. When I was just a boy of 12 years old, we were in the Pine Barrens in New Jersey where I grew up, and we were huckleberry picking. And a thunderstorm came, and I was up to my ankles in water running for the car. And I felt the hair on my head go up. I had hair then. And it kept going, as you can see. It kept rising. My hair went to heaven. But anyway, I felt my hair go up, and then a lightning bolt struck the tree in front of me. And I felt the current flow around my body. And that was a pretty terrifying experience for a 12-year-old. You know, how dangerous is lightning to people and the ground? It's estimated for every 600,000 strikes, one person is struck. Ground strikes hit from 500 to 1,000 people in the United States each year. Considering that lightning strikes can have as much as 1 billion volts at a temperature of 50,000 degrees, how is it possible that so many survive? Well, part of it is what I told you about. It goes on the outside of your body. Sometimes you'll see accounts of people who survived lightning strikes, and they talk about how their clothes have been burned off. And that often happens. I often wonder why that worked that way. And they're badly burned, and they're seriously hurt. But they survive because the electricity goes on the outside. And the other thing is that it's pulsating at a very high frequency. It doesn't take very long. So I think the children of Israel were wise to back off as they did. I read of a woman who was praying at a convention, a religious convention, and she had a very great fear of thunderstorms. And one came up while she was praying, and the lightning was flashing and the thunder roaring. And she spoke and she said in the noise, in her voice was heard in shrill supplication, "O Lord, take us under thy protecting wings, for thou knowest that feathers are splendid non-conductors." I thought that was a pretty good scientific prayer. Is lightning biblical? You know, the book in the Bible that has the most about lightning is the book of Job. I'm going to look at Job 37, verse 15, Job 37:15, and so God asked Job in Job 37:15. He says, "Dost thou know when God disposed them?" He's talking about how God controls the clouds there, and caused the light of His cloud or lightning to shine. And now Job didn't know how God caused lightning, and I'm not sure we completely understand either. But here's our best scientific guess. Every object, from the earth itself to the smallest particle, even the air we breathe, contains positive and negative charges. We're not sure in science exactly what charge is. I told the young people this week that one of the reasons why science makes a very poor religion is because we have a hard time defining even our most basic terms. And that's one of those basic terms we have a hard time defining. Anyway, for the most common type of lightning, the top of the cloud becomes positively charged as the electrons are stripped away from ice crystals or water droplets by wind currents, falling hail, a rapid change in rising temperature. No one knows quite for sure. As the top becomes positively charged, the electrons move into the lower clouds, which become negatively charged. And so now we have this charge imbalance that wants to be neutralized, okay? And so what happens is that the lightning will try to even itself out, and sometimes it'll go from cloud to cloud, sometimes from cloud to ground, in order to make the charges balance out again. And thunderclouds are not the only source of lightning. It can come from other types of clouds, as well as snowstorms. You ever heard thunder snow? I have. Dust storms, on occasion from the dust and gases of erupting volcanoes, similar to what the children of Israel experienced in our text. Another verse about lightning in Job is Job 37, verse 11. Job 37, verse 11. "Also by watering, he wearieth the thick cloud." That is, he's loading the clouds with moisture. "He scatters his bright cloud." That is, he scatters his lightning through them. So how does he do this? Well, there's what we call a leader or a lightning channel. As the cloud's getting ready to discharge lightning, it sends out a leader, which can be seen with special high-speed cameras, like a channel for the electrons to flow through. And we believe that these leaders are opened up by cosmic rays coming from our own solar system or from other galaxies even. And these cosmic rays are charged particles that travel at a high rate of speed. And if they go through the air, and right now they're going through your bodies. They go from outer space, going right through the building and so forth. And so if you notice, lightning has that zigzag pattern to it. And so the cosmic rays open up the channel, and then the lightning flows through it. Job 38, verse 35 says, God says, "Canst thou send lightnings that they may go and say unto thee, here we are?" And the answer is, even with our modern scientific knowledge, we can't harness the cosmic rays that mainly originate outside the solar system to provide a path for the lightning. Of course we can't. We can't do it any more than Job could. Here's some little-known lightning facts. Did you know a lightning channel is only 1/2 to 1 inch thick when it short-circuits to the ground? Did you know the length of cloud-to-ground lightning channels may be as many as 10 miles long? Now, last year, we traveled to Colorado Springs, and they have the Garden of the Gods there, and then there's Pike's Peak up here. In the Garden of the Gods, they had signs warning us that if there was a thunderstorm up on Pike's Peak, even if the sun was shining where we were in danger of being hit by lightning down there 10 miles away. And so lightning can strike at great distances. Did you know lightning travels at 100,000 miles per second? Did you know lightning has enough energy to lift a one-ton object 62 miles high? Did you know lightning can strike as many as 40 times in the same channel? You know that old adage that lightning doesn't strike twice in the same place? Forget it, all right? Again. So what aspects of lightning are considered to be what we'd say scientific foreknowledge? We've already talked about that a little bit, about this channel. Job 38, verse 25, the Lord asked, "Who divided a way for the thunder of lightning?" Okay? And so here is this idea about a way for the lightning, this idea of a lightning leader or channel, something we didn't know about until the 20th century. And yet here we see this scientific foreknowledge where the Bible knew about it before scientists did. You know, the Bible's not a science textbook, but everything the Bible says about science is true and reliable. If you look at later in that verse, Job 38:25, go on to verse 26, says, "Who hath divided a way for the lightning and thunder to cause it to rain on the earth?" And so the skeptics say, "Ah, see, you know, these are ancient people, and they think that lightning causes rain, and we're smart, and we know that it's rain that causes lightning." Well, not so fast, okay? When we actually analyze this in the laboratory, you see that if you look at a cloud, you notice that all clouds are raining, right? Why don't they all rain? Well, because the little droplets in the cloud are very small, and they all are charged. And so because they have like charges, they repel each other. They don't come together, and they just float around up there. Okay, and so if you build up an electric field, like with a lightning bolt, that electric field can collapse the droplets together, cause them to form larger droplets, and then overcomes gravity and falls to the ground. So yes, lightning causes it to rain. The Bible knew that before science did. Well, what causes thunder? The air around a lightning strike typically is superheated to about 20,000 degrees Celsius. That's about 3 times hotter than the surface of the sun. And so, because it's heated so much, the surrounding air expands at supersonic speeds, and it creates a shock wave. Now, when we went to Australia with the teams, we used to have these stock whips, and we'd do these stock whips, and they're really long, and the little tip of the stock whip would go faster than the speed of sound, and we get a cracking sound. Well, it's the same principle. In other words, the air is expanding faster than the speed of sound, and so we get that sound, that boom that takes place. You say, well, how about I hear all sorts of different sounds? I hear explosions and crackling and hissing and so forth. It's actually pretty complicated. You know, some of the lightning strikes, you know, they split up when they come down. Some are just a single bolt. Some are going away from us. Some are coming toward us. It depends on the humidity in the air, how we perceive the sound as well. And so there's a lot of atmospheric conditions that give us the sounds that we hear. You know, here's how the author of Job describes the thunder in Job 37, verses 3 and 5. He says, he directeth it under the whole heaven. That is, he's unleashing his lightning under the whole heaven. His lightning unto the ends of the earth. After it a voice roareth, he thundereth with the voice of his excellency. He will not stay them when his voice is heard. God thundereth marvelously with his voice. Great things doeth he, which we cannot comprehend. Now, of course, thunder is not literally the voice of God, but it's a demonstration of power for which he is responsible. But you say, does lightning have any purpose? Is there any use for it? You know, I mean, we understand that we get this marvelous display of God's power, but is there a practical value for lightning? Well, I'm glad you asked that question. You know, it meets our daily requirement for nitrogen in our diets. Now, the nitrogen molecule, there's actually, most of the air that we breathe is made up of nitrogen, okay? And it does us no good whatsoever because we breathe it in, we breathe it out. It has a very strong triple bond that bonds the two nitrogen atoms together. It cannot be broken by anything in our bodies. And so lightning has enough power to rip those atoms apart and so they can combine with oxygen atoms and they are in a form now that can be used by plants. Okay? Now, some plants have this ability to do what we say, fix nitrogen. That's the word for it, to fix it. And they can actually do this in the plant itself. We call those legumes, things like peas can fix nitrogen. But before fertilizers were invented, half of the dietary needs of people on the earth were supplied by lightning, and the other half by legumes. Okay, nowadays, because of artificial fertilizers, we get about half of our food, our dietary needs. This nitrogen turns into protein. We get about half from artificial fertilizers, about a quarter from legumes, and about a quarter from lightning. So without lightning, we'd starve to death. Okay, that's a pretty good practical use. Isn't that, again, we talked about Sunday night, about God's the hallmark of God's creation. He does things in an engineering way to meet the needs of people, but he also makes it beautiful as well. You know, something we can enjoy. I used to sit on the porch and watch the lightning when I was growing up. So that's something maybe you haven't thought about. You know, lightning also provides evidence of the young age of the earth. Now, how does it do that? Have you ever heard of a fulgurite? Okay, it's spelled F-U-L-G-U-R-I-T-E. Okay, raise your hands if you've ever heard of a fulgurite. There's one, two, three. Okay, so in this assembly, we only have about three people who have ever heard of a fulgurite. And that in itself is evidence of the young age of the earth. Let me explain that to you. So there's a couple scientists named Pasek and Hirst, and they went to the Tampa, Florida area, and where it's very sandy, where they have lots of lightning, and they collected fulgurites. Fulgurites are just fossilized lightning strikes. The lightning strikes the soil, the sandy soil, and it makes, glassifies the soil. You can dig these things out of the soil, okay, these fulgurites. Now, I actually have, you probably can't see it where you are, you can come up later and look at this. This is actually a piece of a fulgurite that I purchased, okay? And I also have an artificial fulgurite here. And how I got this is one of the great miracles of modern time. I went to a used car dealer, and I was talking to him about the fact we're going to travel on the road, and I was going to do these science demonstrations and talk about the Bible and science. And I was talking to him about, I was trying to witness to him actually, trying to talk to him about lightning and how God uses lightning and about fulgurites, these fossilized lightning strikes. And he said, oh, I have one of those in my office. Imagine a used car dealer with a fulgurite in his office. He says, my brother, he said, he travels around as a Dr. Zeus. He wears chain mail and he has lightning coming out of his fingertips and so forth. And he makes artificial fulgurites that you hand out to people. So he takes a piece of plexiglass, he puts it on a plate that has a million volts, and he takes a copper nail and he strikes it, and it goes like that, and makes the fulgurite. And so he gave me a fulgurite. So one of the great miracles of modern times is I got something for free from a used car dealer, and I didn't pay anything. Okay, so I thought that was pretty good. So that's my fulgurite. You're welcome to come up and take a look at that too. I'll put it over here so you can see it. Okay. So if you calculate, we can figure out how many lightning strikes hit the ground. We know, in a particular period of time, and we know, how many should form fulgurites. And so if you calculate it over, say, a 4 billion year period, I calculated it as 4,000. There should be 4,000 fulgurites per square meter, square yard. 4,000, okay? So if the Earth was 4 billion years old, then everybody in this room would know what a fulgurite is. Because every time you put a shovel in the ground to try to dig a garden or something, you'd be hitting fulgurites, okay? So the fact that so few people in this room knew what a fulgurite was is evidence of the young age of the Earth. The Earth is only thousands of years old rather than billions of years old. Now, how is lightning spoken of in the Bible? Lightning is essentially a description of something that's indescribable. If you want to look over in Ezekiel chapter 1, you'll see a description where Ezekiel uses lightning to describe something that's hard to describe. In this passage, he's talking about cherubim. Okay, now, he knew what cherubim looked like. There was pictures of them on the curtains of the temple, and there's some over the Ark of the Covenant and so forth. So they knew better than we do what cherubim looked like. But look how he describes the cherubim in Ezekiel 1:13-14, for as a likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire, and their appearance of lamps. It went up and down among the living creatures, and fire was bright. And out of the fire went forth lightning, and the creatures ran and returned as the appearance of a flash of lightning. I feel sorry for Ezekiel trying to describe something indescribable. There's lightning involved here. Someday, I'm going to see cherubim, and I'll have an idea of how well Ezekiel did describing these creatures like bolts of lightning. Daniel saw something similar in Daniel chapter 10. And he says, I lifted up, this is Daniel 10:5-6. I lifted up mine eyes, and I looked, behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose loins were girded with fine gold of Uphaz. His body also was like beryl, and his face as the appearance of lightning. And his eyes as lamps of fire, his arms and his feet like the color of polished brass, and the words of his voice like the voice of a multitude. Does that sound familiar to you? That sounds like some other passage in Scripture? Sounds like Revelation. Sounds like the Son of God, okay, described in terms of lightning. You know, I often, when I was a kid, thought, what would it be like to die and open my eyes and see Jesus for the first time. Fanny Crosby was a blind hymn writer. She wrote, when my life work is ended and I shall cross the swelling tide. When the bright and glorious morning I shall see, I shall know my Redeemer when I reach the other side, and his smile will be the first to welcome me. Oh, the soul-thrilling rapture when I view his blessed face and the luster of his kindly beaming eye, how my full heart will praise him for the mercy, love, and grace that prepare for me a mansion in the sky. She uses the word luster. It's luster indeed. If we think about Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration, it says that his countenance was like lightning, okay? And his raiment white and glistering, okay? Even the angels describe that way as being glistering. That glistering is an old English word that means with the appearance of lightning. So I'm wondering if I, when I wake up in heaven, the first, you know, and I look at Jesus for the first time, I'm going to go, ah, like that. It's going to be so bright, I can hardly get my eyes open, you know, because of the flash of lightning that I see. Turn with me to Luke chapter 17. Excuse me, it's Luke chapter 10. Let's look at Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10. Here is a passage about the disciples. They're going out. They're going from village to village. They're preparing the way for Christ, for Jesus to come and go throughout Galilee. And they come, and they come back to Jesus, and they say, you know, we had all these wonderful miracles we did. We healed the sick, and we cast out the demons, and they just had a great time. I suppose if we had been there, maybe we would have said, well, here's a few dusty disciples, and they did a few miracles, and so forth. We maybe not would have thought something notable had taken place. But look how Jesus responds in Luke 10:18. And after they tell them about what they did, he says, and he said unto them, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. Now, isn't that odd? I mean, that's not the way anybody I know would have responded. They tell him about these miracles and so forth. And he says, I saw Satan as lightning fall from heaven. Well, that took place thousands of years previous to that Satan fell as lightning. And he's saying that this was a notable defeat for Satan, is what he's saying. This is like when Satan was cast out of heaven. You've had such a notable success as you went from village to village. You know, we don't see in the spiritual realm. We don't see what's really happening. When I was just a kid, probably 5 years old, I went to a summer Bible school class in my church. And I was taught a flannel graph lesson by Mrs. Evelyn Thompson, who's now with the Lord. And she showed a flannel graph lesson of Jesus knocking on the door of my heart, old, rough wooden door with no handle on the outside, and she explained to me as a child that I would have to open the door of my heart from the inside to let Jesus in. And she asked us to raise our hands who wanted to let Jesus come into the door of our hearts. And I raised my hand. And then I ran down the hall. My mother was a teacher in another classroom. I said, Mommy, Mommy, I asked Jesus to come into my heart. And she said, that's nice. Let's go eat lunch. Okay, that's my salvation story, okay? And we don't know what goes on in the heart of a child, but I really was saved then. If Jesus had been there, he would have said, I saw Satan as lightning falling from heaven. That's what he would have said, because he would have seen what really happened. You can't tell. You can't tell with children what's going on there. My hat's off to those of you who teach children, labor with children, and never know, you know, what the results are with children. But sometimes those children, like I did, really accept Christ, and it changes their lives forever. Well, what should be our response to a bolt from the blue? It's said as a young law student, Martin Luther was walking outside on a steamy July evening in 1505, when a lightning bolt hit so close it knocked him over. At that moment, seized with terror, he vowed to become a monk. He quit his legal studies and checked into a monastery. Martin Luther, even though he was still unregenerated at this point in his life, was convinced that God was for real. And in fact, the Bible says that once any man has seen the magnificence, the intricacies, the beauties of what's been created, then we have no excuse for not knowing that God exists. And if God is for real, we should be very interested in what he has to say about where we are now and where we are going. Romans 1:20 says, "For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead. So they are without excuse." Do you want to taste small taste of what it will be like standing before the God of the universe on Judgment Day? Go out and stand in a severe, no, don't do that. Don't stand in a severe thunderstorm. But think about where you are and where you stand with him. Captain Alan Bean, who was an Apollo astronaut, wrote this account of the Apollo spacecraft being hit by lightning. He said, "Test pilots have a litmus test for evaluating problems. When something goes wrong, they ask, 'Is this thing still flying?' If the answer is yes, then there's no immediate danger, no need to overreact. When the Apollo 12 took off, the spacecraft was hit by lightning. The entire console began to glow with orange and red trouble lights. There was a temptation to do something, but the pilots asked themselves, 'Is this thing still flying in the right direction?' The answer was yes, it was headed for the moon. They let the lights glow as they addressed the individual problems and watched the orange and red lights blink out one by one." That's something to think about in any pressure situation. If your thing is still flying, think first and then act. You know, the same principle applies to our lives. When a bolt from the blue strikes, whether figuratively or actually, it's a good time to take account of our lives. Now, I had a secretary named Julie that worked for me, and she married the young man of her dreams, and they had two children together, and she thought it was clear sailing for the rest of her life. But her husband died very young, and then she was left to raise these children by herself. And then she got lupus, and then she got cancer. And I remember being so low that she doubted her own salvation. I still remember that day. And that happens to a surprising number of people that know the Lord as they get into that kind of situation. They get so low emotionally, they doubt whether they're even saved. Well, the Apostle Paul writes a verse to people like that, and that's in 2 Corinthians 13:5. He says, "Examine yourselves, whether you be in the faith. Prove your own selves. Know ye not your own selves, how that Jesus Christ is in you, unless ye be reprobates." Now, while Paul was coming to the Corinth, he was going to judge the Corinthians, and he wanted them to examine themselves before he got there. But he had confidence that they would look at their lives and they'd say, "Yes, we are in the faith. Yes, we can look at the trajectory of our life and we can see we're headed the right way." And that's what I urged my secretary, Julie, to do. I said, "Well, look at the course of your life. Look how God has dealt with you and his goodness to you all through your life. And you can see that your life is headed to the right direction. You're headed toward heaven." And it was a comfort to her. He was writing to genuine believers, telling them to examine their works to gain assurance that they were experiencing sanctification. They were walking in obedience to the faith. Now, it may be true that when you do it, you'll find out there may be a few here that examine your life and say, "No, I've never had the experience of salvation. I've just been going through the motions," or whatever. And that happens too. But I think it's probably a small number in a place like this. So remember that when the lightning strikes. You know, like all astronauts may see the console of our lives glow with trouble lights after lightning strikes by examining our works, and we can tell our lives are pointed in the right direction. Lightning is awe-inspiring, points us to our even more awe-inspiring God. So the next time you see a lightning bolt, hear the crack of thunder, I think you should think all these things in rapid succession. Number one, am I in a safe place? Okay, let's not, go under a tree. probably good to get in a car or something where you have metal around you. Number two, the Creator God is in control of the world, and I am not. It's good when anything happens to you. Jim Berg always said, there's a God in heaven, and I'm not him, okay? And we need to remember that. Number three, God designed lightning for my good. It gives me food to eat. Number four, Jesus looks like lightning. Number five, I'm not afraid of unexpected events because I can see the evidence in the way that I live, that my life, that I'm a child of God. And I hope that's an encouragement to you. Now, just before the message, I got a question from a member of the congregation. I just wanted to briefly answer that. It's kind of longer answer, but I'll try not to take too long. The question was, what about global warming? What about global warming? And so I'm going to answer that in about 2 minutes, okay? So I taught a course for about 25 years that dealt with climate change and global warming. So let's think about it as Christians, all right? So we have the flood, Noah's flood. We have a lot of warm water because that water is raining down on the earth. You have potential energy converted to thermal energy, and so you have a lot of warm water. You also have the fountains of the great deep that are breaking up, and so you have a lot of ash, volcanic ash that's spewing up into the air, and so that's blocking the sunlight. So you have warm water, you have cold air, and what you get as a result is you get an ice age. You get these big snowstorms, and they start building up ice in the middle of the continents. Remember that the oceans are warm, so we get the ice sheets start in the middle of the continent, so we can look at the scratch marks in the rocks, and we can see that the ice sheet started in the middle and went out to the edges where the water was. In about 500, 600, 700 years, the water cools down to the temperature it is today, and the ice age ends, and then the ice starts melting. So since that time, the earth has been warming up. So as a Christian, I would expect the earth to be warming, and that's exactly what we see. If you look at Greenland, that's left over from the ice age. You look at Antarctica, that's left over from the ice age. Antarctica is the driest continent on earth, and so you don't get much snow there. So how do you get these miles of ice there? Well, because of the ice age after the flood. Only the flood could give us an ice age, and so those things are melting. People are concerned about it, about these things melting. But that's what I would expect as a Christian who believes in a global and a universal flood. So I don't know what other answers were asked for here, but I have to say that I'm a global warming agnostic. Okay, I'm the first agnostic to ever speak from this pulpit. Pastor Clear will probably come back from the Turkey to get me out of his pulpit. Anyway, what I mean is that I don't believe that in science we have good enough computer programs to tell us how much of the global warming we're experiencing is because of man's activities. It's the same kind of programs that we use for predicting the weather. Okay, so if I told you it was going to rain tomorrow based on these computer models, you might bring an umbrella. If I said it's going to rain next week, you'll say, well, nobody knows that. I'm not going to bother. I'm not going to listen to you. If I told you it's going to rain next year, you'd think I was crazy, okay? And so that's the problem. The same kind of computer models we use to predict the climate change are the same kinds we use for the weather. And that's why so many weathermen are climate change skeptics, because they understand the limits of science and computer programs for predicting the future. So that's the short answer there. I have a lot longer answer, but we'd be here all evening. So thank you very much for your good attention.
Thank you again for being with